Hey guys, Colleen Wolf from NFL Network. And look, you may or may not know, I'm from Philly. I'm ride or die Philadelphia, but especially when it comes to sports. So you guys need to check out Mike Small on the Killing Me Smalls podcast. This guy crushes it, and I can't wait to hear what he has to say next.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Killing Me Smalls podcast. I'm your host, Mike Small, along with Keith Pompey from the Philadelphia Inquirer. Keith is, in my opinion, I say it all the time, the top reporter in the city. If there's a tough question that needs to be asked, it's always going to be him. He catches some heat sometimes. We joke about that. But I love that he asks it because he is a great reporter and a great friend. Keith, welcome back to the podcast, my man.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Love having you always. So the 76ers are the number one seed in the East with, what, about 17 games to go. They came off a neat 7-point victory when you had a blowout and you had to bring your starters back in. They beat the Brooklyn Nets last night. You wrote an article this morning saying you weren't terribly impressed. Do you want to elaborate?
I mean, the thing about it is, you know, this was supposed to be the game. You know, we've been talking about this for weeks that we were hoping that this
benchmark
was a game. Benchmark game. Yeah. National TV, you know, they brought in a whole bunch of people there. I mean, it was just for what? I mean, we learned that the Sixers could hold off their backups. That's what we learned. Now, again, the Sixers were beating them by 22, something they were supposed to do. But at the same time, it was a benchmark, and we didn't get it. We don't know. Like, going into the playoffs, you still don't know if the Sixers can match up against the Brooklyn Nets, right?
Let's talk about that. So you're right. We learned nothing last night, really. If the Sixers were at full strength and played the Nets at full strength in a playoff series, who you picking based on what we know and don't know, and why?
I'm picking Brooklyn. I mean, okay, so, all right, I'm going to ask you a question.
All right, now let's dig into it.
No, I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
So you have three players, and you have three players on Brooklyn. Who are the three players you're going to guard?
Well, obviously Kyrie, KD, and Harden.
Okay. So you're going to guard them. They're still going to get their shots, right? They're still going to get some shots. But then who's guarding Joe Harris?
So here's what I would do. I've actually given this a little bit of thought. So I was going to ask you this question. So since you asked me, I'm going to give you my answer. Then you tell me. Seth Curry can't start. It's either going to have to be George Hill or Matisse. And what I would do is I would have Simmons on Harden. I would have Matisse on Kyrie, even though, look, he was on him yesterday and Kyrie still got his, but he really had to work for him. And I think Tobias guarding Durant with Embiid helping out, right? And I think, you know, Danny Green is a serviceable player on defense for sure. So I think, but the question that I would throw back to, so I think the Sixers could do a reasonable job that way. But who's guarding Joel? And how are they going to guard the Sixers? Right?
Man, first of all, you don't pick. Like, I love Tobias. Tobias is having a heck of a season. But Kevin Durant is the best player on that team.
He's going to get have Tobias. I'm not saying him. Tobias
I mean,
is locking him up.
Even, yeah, you can't have. Yeah, but you can't. I love Tobias. Great player. But to me, I don't think that's a fair, like, you know, my thing is, like, you may have to do something crazy, just throw Embiid on them, right? And have, like, how they did before. Remember how, like, Tobias was covering centers? You may have to do that.
Cover DeAndre Jordan. I mean, why not?
I mean, you know, I mean, he was covering Marc Gasol and when they played Toronto. Mm-hmm. So, like, you may have to do that. I get what you're saying. With the who's going to guard Embiid. Now, here's the problem.
I will say this. I think the Sixers have the best chance of anybody in the NBA to guard those three guys. Maybe the Lakers, I guess, Clippers. But nobody in the East can guard those three. And the Sixers, I think, have the best chance to do it.
Well, you got to realize the Milwaukee Bucks now. The Milwaukee Bucks have Drew Holiday. They have Giannis, you know, and they also have what's the guy they just picked up from Houston Rockets? Oh, man. Yeah, P.J. Tucker. Now, P.J. Tucker is a serviceable defender, and I think they picked him up for that. I mean, again, you know, is he P.J. Tucker from a couple years ago? Did he was he struggling this year? But when we're talking about being a defender and he can hit threes. Now, see, I love Matisse, too. But the problem is if you have Matisse and Ben Simmons on the floor at the same time, right, if you have them on the floor at the same time, now what are they going to bring you on the offensive end? That's the problem right there. Now, the one guy we're not talking about is George Hill.
Well, that's what I think. You can go George Hill on Kyrie.
Yeah, you can. You can. But the thing is, like, my thing, like, you know, I get what everybody's saying about, okay, the big three has only played seven games together. But something tells me that they're sitting back and laughing at all of us. Like, they'll have an open run or they'll have a practice, and then the next day they'll have a game and they're sitting out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Now, I know a game and a practice are completely different. But, you know, I think that when it comes down to off the court chemistry and all that other stuff, I think it means a lot. And I also think that this year, because of how condensed everything is, you know, we're starting to see guys who have injuries who are staying out a little longer than normal. So with that being said, it's kind of like they're not the only team doing. Look at the Lakers. I mean, you know, look at the Portland Trailblazers early on. There were a lot of guys who were out longer. So, you know, I think that, yes, they need to have some on-court chemistry, but I find it hard to believe that these guys aren't doing stuff like when no one's watching. You know what I mean? But
so let me I definitely want to go back to that. But before we move on there, answer my other question. How do the Nets match up against the Sixers?
Defensively. I mean,
last night was not any indication of what they could do.
I mean, it's true. Like the defense, their defense is like, you know, I mean, the best defense is a strong offense. And when you're talking about Brooklyn Nets, you know what I mean? That's the thing. You know, yeah. You know, I just think that when you have, we're not even talking about Blake Griffin, but I think when you have that much firepower, the guy who's going to kill you is going to be the Joe Harris guy, because you're going to put someone on him that really may not should be on the floor. Like, okay, you're going to say
Danny Green could guard him.
I think Danny Green can guard him. But I think that you're going to have Danny Green, because Danny Green's one of their better defenders, you know?
Yeah.
I think you're going to have Danny Green on maybe a more high power guy. Yeah, that would be great if Danny Green's on him. But I think that we're going to see like a Seth Curry or a Shake Milton on him. That's what I think, man. That's what I think. You know, now maybe if you pick George Hill on him, yeah, of course. But, you know, a guy like Durant, the thing about Durant is he has such a mid-range game. He's bigger than everyone else. Mm-hmm. But Embiid, I think if you put Embiid out there in space on him, that could be a tough matchup. You know what I mean? Because he's not like a backup kind of banging type of guy. So that's the problem. Now, again, they lose a lot with LaMarcus Aldridge. They lose a lot with LaMarcus Aldridge. So, and what I mean by that is with him leaving, because, you know, he's like a pick and pop type of guy. You know, so they lose a lot with him.
Yeah, that hurt them, because I don't think Blake Griffin's got a ton left. He can definitely help them. But I think the bottom line is, now if I'm looking at the other side of the basketball court, you know, who's guarding Embiid? And, you know, Durant doesn't like to work on defense. And if he's going to guard Tobias will make him work on defense. I think that, you know, who's going to guard Ben Simmons? You know what I mean? I just think that the matchups, I don't think the Nets are a clear-cut favorite. And I'm not fanboying out on this, because I'm pretty, you know me, I'm pretty straight with you. I think it's a better matchup than a lot of people think it is. Would I pick the Sixers? I think it's a coin flip, honestly.
Yeah, well, I mean, here's the thing. They got to play the game. The playoff basketball is completely different.
But if it's close, them only playing seven games together might hurt. And Steve Nash never coaching in a regular season, much less.
I'm not going with that, bro. No. Stop.
Are we fighting, Jackson? Are we at war right now?
No. I'm just saying this. Listen, that's the biggest joke when people say that to me, and I'm not calling you a joke. So Phil Jackson was known as not a really good, no one heard of him. So they give him great players. All of a sudden, the Bulls win what? They win six championships, right? With a guy by the name of Phil Jackson, who no one thought was a good coach, didn't know too much about him. Then he goes to the Lakers and he does the same thing. So what I'm trying to say is, yes, it's great to have a good coach, right? But you need great players. I mean, they got two MVPs, right? You need great players. And then not only that, let's look at his bench. So he has two former head coaches on his bench. So when I hear stuff like that, especially in today's NBA, you got to be like a manager. You got to have a good relationship.
Kyrie and Durant are the co-coaches, like Kyrie said before the season.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I want to go there because I think that's some people might take it, that's a shot on this guy as a coach. I think he's a better coach. I think that he's a better X and O's guy than people are going to give him credit for, right? You look at any team nowadays who wins a championship, all of them. I think Doc Rivers is a phenomenal coach. But in order for you to win, you got to have Hall of Fame type players. He has Hall of Fame type players, right? So, Doc had it. Greg Popovich had it. Phil Jackson had it. I mean, when you go down the list, all the greatest coaches, they had it. So, and now I think nowadays with this guy, Steve Kerr, Steve Nash, a first year coach, it's kind of we forget that this guy was a former MVP. We won it twice. So and when you look at him, you're not saying this guy, he doesn't come to the playground and you're saying he comes to the playground nowadays and people are well, who's this soccer dude? They're not even thinking basketball. They're thinking soccer. Who's this Canadian, right? So, but then you look at it, he has skills. He's smart. He's very cerebral. He's better than you think. So a lot of times I think people don't give him credit because he's on that team.
I'm not disagreeing with a word you're saying.
Yeah.
But he's not coached a team in a game seven of a playoff series. Now, we all saw Brett Brown do that. We, and I think a lot of people think that the reason the Sixers are a lot better this year, aside from a smarter roster, is they've got a better coach. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, they have a better coach, but also you also look at when stuff start taking off in the positive way, who was right next to Brett Brown, or who was the guy they stopped running his things, but Mike D'Antoni was there and they start having success a little bit. I know that was a 10-win year, but they were playing well. And then all of a sudden it was Mike D'Antoni, too much Mike D'Antoni conversation. And then all of a sudden, they stopped running his sets.
Okay. I just feel like you and I are fighting today and I'm good with it. So let me fight with you one more time. How good has Mike D'Antoni been deep into the playoffs? Talking about Sixers and Nets game seven. Close game. Do you feel better about Doc Rivers drawing up plays with Sam Cassell and the crew he's got? Or do you feel better about Steve Nash and Mike D'Antoni drawing up plays despite who the great players are on either side? I'm just saying I think coaching matters. I don't think coaching matters as much in some sports. I think it matters in basketball. I really do.
Yeah, well, here's my thing. I do think that Doc Rivers is a better coach. I mean, I think Doc Rivers is a a Hall of Fame coach, right? I think Doc Rivers is a great coach, right? I think Doc Rivers has a great coaching staff. I'm not, what I'm trying to say is, all I'm saying is that a lot of people like just think that this guy is stealing money because he's in Brooklyn and he has great talent. So I'm just saying that he's a better coach. Now, again,
smart guy. He's a smart guy and was a talented player. I just think, but he hasn't done it before.
Yeah, he hasn't done it before. But, you know, I think that, I don't know, he has a lot of talent, man. He has a lot.
They do.
And we'll see. I mean, let's put it this way. If they lose, it's going to be one of the biggest upsets. And because of like people are going to criticize them. People are going to say everything you did was wrong. You should have had the guys playing this and that. They're like the overwhelming favorite. And even after last night, I mean, they took Kyrie out of the game with like 9 minutes, a little less than 9 minutes to play. And they had Timothy Luwalu and Landry Shamet just going to work, right? On guys who the Sixers thought were better, like Shake Milton and all them. They were going to work on them. And even when they brought their starters back, the tide didn't go back to the Sixers. They were catching some of those Jays too, right?
Yeah, they held on by a thread. There's no question.
They held on by a thread. So even with that said, that like makes the Brooklyn Nets invincibility go up another notch. Like, whoa. To people, you're thinking like, so you did this with your backups? So if the Sixers beat them, if I'm Doc Rivers, I'm sitting pretty because all the pressure is on Brooklyn right now.
Well, there's no doubt. Let's end it here. There's no question in my mind that if the Sixers were matched up against Brooklyn in the Eastern Conference Finals, Brooklyn would be the overwhelming favorite in terms of the odds makers, in terms of the media and everything else. I just believe that the team with the better defense always has a chance. And I think if Brooklyn had a decent defense, I'd feel a lot better about it, but they don't. They don't have interest in it. Mike D'Antoni's never coached defense. Steve Nash was not a great defender. He was a great player. So I do think there's something there in terms of winning a championship. Can they get in the finals that way? Can they get by the Lakers? Can they get by? Yeah, sure. But I'm not throwing all my money down. That's all I'm saying.
Now, here's one thing I'm going to say this. It's two ways of approaching this season.
Okay.
You know, you have Joel Embiid once a game, he does a grimaces in pain. Yeah. You right?
After that dunk,
he grimaces in pain. Once a game, he's playing in that knee brace. He done had more than, like Doc Rivers believe he tried out at least 10 of them, right? You have Tobias Harris, who is playing with a banged up knee, right? He's just going out there like, given all that he has.
Yeah.
You know, my question is, and I agree with you 100%, but there's going to have to come a point in time where the Sixers are going to have to think long and hard about some of these games because they may have to rest up these guys as well. Because, see, they're taking – don't get me wrong, what Doc is doing, he's hoping and praying that his team can get a huge lead – and then he can give these guys, his players could play anywhere from 30 to 35 minutes, what have you, take the night off. We're not practicing the next day. Just show up the day of the game. Well, I get that. But my thing is, in order for the Sixers to be successful, Joel Embiid has to be the tip-top playing shape. He has to be in tip-top health. And right now, you know, as much as we talk about Ben Simmons being an all-star, Tobias Harris offensively is their second best player. He is the guy that they go to in the clutch. And if both of these guys are banged up going into the playoffs, you know, they're going to lose a lot. And especially,
look, I don't care if Joel Embiid wins the MVP. I think he's got to sit at least 5-10 more games.
Yeah.
At least 5-7 more games out of the last 17-18 games. I got no problem with it. The thing is, can they talk him into that?
Yeah, that's the problem. That's the problem. Because, and you know, you look at it right now, he hasn't played in enough games because he missed, 18? So now, like, when you look at it, he's not even, like, like he's averaging the second most points in the league, but he's not listed because
he hasn't played enough games.
Played enough games, and so it's weird, man.
There's two ways to look at it. I mean, you know, one, the first way is that, you know, Jokic has been amazing, but with Jamal Murray out, if they don't finish in the top four, he's probably not going to get it, even though he probably should. And I do actually think they have enough talent to still finish in the top tier there. The other thing is if Embiid, you know, plays most of the rest of the games and, you know, just keeps having wrecking crew games like he does last night that are all over SportsCenter and, you know, really dominant efforts. I do think that'll the narrative will be enough to get him over the top, but it's not worth it. I don't care if he gets an MVP. I want the guy to be healthy going into the playoffs.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, you're ultimately judged by what you do in the playoffs. And, you know, as great as Embiid and Simmons are, their tandem, you know, they don't want their legacy to be as two guys who made at best second round exits in the playoffs. You know, and I'm pretty sure the Sixers don't want that either. Like, you know, Doc Rivers doesn't want that. Daryl Morey, you know, I mean, this team has been in first place for basically most of the season from the beginning. You know, this team has been in, like, everybody's kept waiting for them to lose, and they haven't. So you're right. It would be great to get this. And like, here's the thing. Is Joel Embiid the best player in the league, in my opinion? He is. He is. He just missed some games. And I think everyone knows that. Like, you know, he's just been dominant this year. So with that being said, it's one of those things where I think that if they did take some time off, you know, there might be some critics saying, oh, look at him missing time. But people know you're looking at, look at AD, look at LeBron. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at guys from other teams. They're all taking time off because this is a grueling season.
Taking some time lately.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, and like we're all coming out and we're all saying like it's you know, it's these injuries or this guy is hurt. Nah, a lot of times it's not. They're tired. And the coach is thinking about the playoffs. Because let's face it, you know, Giannis could go out there and get 35 points a night and probably win a scoring title. But we're talking about the Milwaukee Bucks, a team that underachieved in the playoffs the last 2 years. They need Giannis to go far. And so it's the same thing for everything. Even down to George Hill, like, could George Hill probably force it and come out there and play? He could. But it's one of those things where, you know, you want to be healthy. You don't want him to come in and then all of a sudden take a step back. So, you know, I think people may be critical, but at the end of the day, we're talking about legacies here, and legacies aren't built in the regular season. They're built in what you do in the playoffs.
Is that a t-shirt? Legacies are not built in the regular season. I think Pompeii. Let's get one.
Maybe we should do that, man. Get it. Like,
that.
Yeah.
I like that. So if we're looking back in, you know, at the end of the summer, say the Sixers get bounced in the second round or make it to the Eastern Conference Finals and lose or whatever, you know, we're going to be looking back with the woulda, coulda, shoulda in terms of, you know, going harder after Harden, going harder after Kyle Lowry, whatever. Where we are right now, did Daryl Morey do enough for this team, in your opinion?
You know, here's the thing. I think if they get to the Eastern Conference Finals, I think you have to say, I mean, based off of what the stuff that Embiid is going through right now, and I know some people say finals or bust, but I think if they get to the Eastern Conference Finals, knowing that they're going to have cap space next year to go out and get people, right? People coming off the books. I think that is a successful season. Now, in regards to people saying, did Daryl Morey do enough? You know, I think that when we talk about that James Harden deal, I think that some people may be a little unfair to Daryl Morey. And the reason why I'm saying that is because he did offer Ben Simmons, and he did offer Matisse Thybulle, right? So he offered those two guys who basically was a way better factor.
Turning that down for what they took.
Well, I mean, it's stupid, but at the same time, you know, we got to realize something. This guy left us, and this is the guy who, talking about Houston thinking, Daryl Morey left us, and he wants us to give him our best player so they can leave us and go to Philly and win a championship. So I felt like there was a lot of interference that maybe they weren't being as forthcoming. I mean, as they weren't trying to help the Sixers out as much as they were. Like they,
at the end of the day, I've heard that, and I'm sure Tillman Fertitta had a lot to do with it, and I'm sure there's hard feelings. But at the end of the day, if you're a Rockets fan, would you rather have Matisse Thybulle, Ben Simmons, and two picks, or would you rather have the corpse of Victor Oladipo and a bunch of picks that you're going to get from the Nets, who look like they're going to be a dynasty for the next 3-4 years? It just made no sense to me, if all the reports were true.
It doesn't have to make sense. I mean, no, it's kind of like, you know, like, well, what do they say? A woman scorned. And I'm not calling them a woman or anything like that, but I'm just saying, like, a woman scorned. Like, you know what I mean? You don't know what she's going to do. You know what I mean? You like if you
let's
feel
go
like
with a person scorned. We're in person,
a person scorned. Sometimes you get your emotions involved and you're like, forget it. Now, I was out in Dallas a couple of days ago, and I was talking to people, you know, from Houston. They were at the game, and they said they felt like they didn't think that Ben Simmons was a maybe a franchise player, right? Or they know he is, but not – they didn't think that him meshing with John Wall would bring out the best of Ben. Because John has a ball.
I would have got rid of John Wall.
Yeah. But
look, Simmons is a lightning rod. We both know that, especially in Philadelphia. You know, he's not been great since the All-Star game. Says he has a lot going on in his life, but he was pretty good last night. Where do you stand on Ben? Is Ben a star? Is he an elite star, or is he just a really good player?
You know, I'm big on Ben. You know, I'm big on Ben. I mean, here's my thing with Ben. Ben Simmons never told us that he was something that he wasn't. Never did. And what I mean by that is, when Ben Simmons is successful, it's not like scoring a bunch of points, doing all this other stuff. It's when he's more of a utility type of person. You know what I mean? So with that being said, it's kind of sort of like, and then here's another thing. Like, we've been asking Ben Simmons to shoot 3-pointers for the last 4 years. He doesn't do it. But we always get hyped up because somebody in his camp is always releasing videos of him doing it. And we're like, this is going to be the year. In the beginning of the season, Ben Simmons always says, that's not my game. That's not my game. If I'm open, I'll take it. But I'm more of a facilitator. So, you know, I think that a lot of people look at it and they say, this guy is making $30+ million a year. He's doing what he's doing. But he's doing the same stuff he's always been doing. He's making that money because, A, he was the first overall pick. B, he was the rookie of the year. C, he was an all-star. So he continues to keep doing what he was an all-star. So he continues to like although the numbers might not be there, he keeps checking the boxes. So he gets paid. But then all of a sudden, once he gets paid, people want him to do stuff that he hasn't done before. Right?
So can I give you my Simmons theory on why it drives people nuts? I don't think it's the shooting. I think the shooting is a cop-out. I think people want him to shoot. He's not going to shoot. Who cares? I think that the thing that drives people nuts about Simmons are the things that he does that they feel are very controllable. When he misses 10 shots right around the rim when he's 6'10", just dunk it or you know, throw it in or go hard to the rim or just make the stupid layup. He misses so many layups. That drives people nuts. And I think the other thing is when he gets deep into, deep into the paint, and he sees somebody there and doesn't feel like being aggressive, and he just turns around and throws it behind him. If he fixed those two things and still played defense the way he does and was aggressive to the basket, I love that couple of weeks where we're seeing those hook shots every game. the passes are outstanding. And if he, you know, and if his turnover ratio stays pretty well, no one will say a damn word. It's those two things that everybody knows he could fix. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I agree. And that's where the frustration comes at. Mm-hmm. But I also think that, you know, it's like, you know, him and Joel, they developed bad habits when they first came into the league. Like when they first came here, they were the guy. Like there wasn't no one to say, hey, Joel, you're going to carry my bags. Hey, Joel, Rook, here, let me elbow you in the chest. Nah, there was no one to say, hey, Ben, you know, you need to work on this. Now, coaches may say it, but when you have a guy and they come in and from day one, you know, they get away whatever they want to. They're not held accountable by the people in there. They're going to develop these bad habits. You know, like, I mean, they were treated like all-stars before they were all-stars. You know what I mean? So then you try to change them. Now, so it was the process. And even down to Ben, like whenever you talk to Ben about certain things, he was like, well, I never had to do it before. I was always that good. So he never had to do it before. But yeah, you're right. He misses a lot of bunnies. He does. And, you know, what he does is he drives the lane and he kicks it back and he jumps in the air, and then he kicks it back. Mm-hmm. And that used to be a turnover going the other way. You know, it used to be like it still is, but it was like
it's better. It's better.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like Doc has gotten him to be a little more aggressive, but he still goes in streaks of that. And, you know, look, I think those two things are fixable. And I think if he fixes those two things, no one would say a damn word about three-pointers or shooting because he's that good at everything else.
Yeah, and here's the thing, Mike. Like, if you just look it up, and I haven't, like, taken the time to basically sit down and analyze it, like, you know, each time. But it seems like to me a lot of times when we see Ben Simmons with these 30-point games and all this stuff and everyone's like, wow. Then typically in losses. Like, he looks spectacular. Now, again, if they're playing the Brooklyn Nets, the old Brooklyn Nets, right?
Yeah.
The old Brooklyn Nets. When he played them, you know, we're like, wow, Ben Simmons is amazing. But there was no one on the floor that was better than him. These young forwards couldn't stop him. The guards were too small for him.
Rudy can't stop him.
Yeah, Rudy can't stop him. But the thing is, even that, like, if you have Ben Simmons going out there, attacking the rim, doing everything else, well, he's not getting everybody else involved. He's right. Not doing the intangible things, right? And they tend to lose against good teams when he has those type performances. So, you know, to me, you know, and again.
So what you're saying is when George Hill's on the floor instead of Steph Curry and they can have another ball handler, it enables Ben to free up and either score or get somebody a basket.
Yeah, but here's something else though. When George Hill comes, I expect us to see Ben at a lot of like that point forward position, mm-hmm. or you know what I mean, a lot of that. You know, Tobias sliding down, you know, and George is in there running, you know, doing what he can because he can shoot, he can handle, you know. And I think that's what the Sixers are going to have to do in the playoffs.
That's what Brett Brown wanted to do in the bubble last year with Shake, but Shake wasn't good enough for that.
Yeah, and then, but also it was one of those things. It started out where Ben was the point forward, but then all of a sudden Ben became the power forward, just like, you know, this and that. And it just didn't work out. Like, Ben's a guy who you have to let him touch the ball. You know what I mean? You have to let him feel and be like he's involved.
Well, Keith, we could go on for days. And actually, let's do it. Let's go on for another couple hours. No, I'm just kidding. Let's wind this thing down. I love when you come on the podcast. I love talking to you about the Sixers. It's always fun, always a good debate, always an intelligent debate. And I appreciate that. Appreciate your friendship. I wanted to throw something out there. As many of you know, my daughter has a brain tumor and is doing amazingly well and has decided to use her gift of health, which she currently has. We have to get an MRI every 6 months to give back to others. She started a 501c3 charity called Small Miracles. And to date, she's raised over $40,000 for kids with cancer, kids that are at Children's Hospital getting oncology treatment, chemotherapy, and she's gotten them iPads, gift baskets, all kinds of great things to brighten their day. If you want to be involved with that and read about her journey, please go onto the website. It's smallmiraclesinc.org. Or if you just want to donate $1 up to $1 million, whatever you want, the Venmo is @small_miracles. You can follow me on Twitter @RealMikeSmall. And Keith, where can everybody read your stuff?
They can read my stuff in Inquirer.com. You can also follow me on Twitter @PompeyOnSixers.
Don't forget about that podcast.
Oh, yeah. Locked On Podcast. I have to get you on there, man.
It's been a while. I'm ready. I need a guest spot.
Yeah, I need you on there. Yeah, next week we're going. I'm gonna get you on there, definitely.
You can afford me.
I hope so. I hope so. If not, I'm gonna have to get the fake Mike Small.
Oh, don't do that. No, I will always clear time for you, my friend. Yeah, definitely read Keith's stuff. Definitely listen to his podcast and follow him on Twitter. Keith, thank you, my friend.
Thanks for having me, brother.
You got it. Take care, everybody. We will see you next time.
Hey, it's Justin Grasso from Sports Illustrated. You're killing me, Smalls. Enjoy the podcast.